AI this, AI that. It just seems like it's going everywhere, and I want to pull my... Well, wait a second. I don't have any hair to pull out. Anyhow, are you in that frame of mind where you're worried about AI and having AI take your job? Well, my guest today is Philip Blackett, and he is an entrepreneur, an author, and he has a high level and an in-depth knowledge of AI. So he's going to talk to us about, you know, what do we do to prepare ourselves for our jobs for the future? Do we need to start now or do we wait? Well, the obvious thing is we really start now. So if you've got a fear about AI and what it's going to do to your career, or you're just wondering what can we do to secure our jobs right now for the future, or if you're young and you're just up and coming, what can you do? We're going to cover all that. So let's get into it right after I remind you this. If you are a pet owner, please be responsible and have your pets spayed or neutered. All right, let's get into it. Mr. Philip Blackett, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Good. Glad to be on the show. Thanks so much for having me. Doing good.
Yeah, I'm very happy that you're here because, you know, the topic, well, before we get into the topic, you've got, I'm going to say, quite an illustrious career, but you are now a best-selling author. You're an entrepreneur, a speaker, a consultant, and you have several books out there. And I think what one is called The Unfair Advantage, another one, which we're going to really talk about, is Future Proof, How to Adapt and Master AI to Secure Your Job and Your Career. That, I think, is huge. You know, let's talk about this AI thing. First,
sure.
Do you have a fear of AI yourself?
No, I'm actually loving it.
Why don't people, you know, there's a lot of fear, right? About people thinking they're going to lose their job, their career.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where oftentimes we fear what we don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's the case, that any fear of AI is probably similar to the fear we had of the internet. And the fear we had of taking Ubers with people we don't know, jumping into cars.
Yeah.
Random people, and the fear of getting on an airplane for the first time. So I think that it's a similar vein here where it's like it's something we've never really seen before. It's something that can drastically change the way we interact with people, let alone, you know, the way we do work going forward. There is a risk of creative destruction, they'll say, in the business world, meaning that, you know, with a new technology, you know, some things will stay the same, some things will be different, and some things may go away, which might include jobs. Yeah. So that's definitely something that could be fearful. I think it's more so the position for us to take to say, hey, this is new. Let's lean into it. Let's learn about it. And learn how we can apply it to what we're doing so that we're thriving with AI rather than being the quote-unquote victim of it.
Right. And you use that word disruption and disrupt. I know in the business world, too, they always talk about, you know, we're going to disrupt the norm. We're going to do something innovative. We're going to do something new and breakthrough. And here now we have this AI that's something new, that's something that's can help with creativity, and it's disruptive. And now we fear this thing. But, you know, the way I look at it is possibly the same as you, is I think it's a great tool to use. And if we know how to reel it in and manage it and use it to our advantage, I think it's really going to help us in the long run.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you hit on the key word there. Tool. Mm-hmm. Like, we as humans don't want to be known as tools. or gears or cogs in a wheel when it comes to business and that sort. But this is one where it's actually like, this is meant to be a tool. Like, you use it to be productive and to get to what you're trying to achieve at. And it's something you can learn to do really well.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as that fear aspect of it goes for people thinking about they're going to lose their jobs and stuff, I personally think that nowadays, especially, you know, coming up to the future, which would be tomorrow and the next day and the next day, what we can do to help ourselves, I think, is to be on top of technology, to understand it and to know it. I think that'll help alleviate some of the fear.
I agree. I think it's, you know, at the time of me doing this episode with you, like I'm watching, for example, March Madness, mm-hmm. right? And so I was just watching the women's semifinal, the Final Four. And what made me think about this while we're talking is just the thought of, you know, I'm a pretty competitive person. I love sports. If I'm on a basketball team, you know, me being on the starting five, it's not a given. Like, you have to work for it.
Yeah.
You have to be the best at what you do, meaning you're going to have to put in the preparation, put in the hours, the practice time, you know, do what you need to do to be fit, get your shot right, and that sort of thing. I think it's something very similar that we should adopt, if we haven't already, in the business world or anywhere we're working when it comes to our jobs. It's like, that job is not a given for us to be there forever. And so if we're going to be on the starting five, so to speak, on that job, we have to continually prepare, get better, and be open to new things that enhance what we do that will prove our merit to say, hey, this is why this person is the right for the job now and going forward. And AI can definitely help with that.
Yeah, and I think going along with that, you know, this does open up other opportunities in the workforce as well, whether it be jobs that are happening now or jobs that may be needed in the future. And one of the things I think about is kids, I'm just going to say kids nowadays, they're used to this stuff. They use a lot of electronics. They use the phones. We use the phones. We text, all that stuff. We have fun AI tools, that word again, tools. But, you know, we have lost touch with a sense of the human being, human kindness, humanity. So I think this is a big chance for service type of industries, learning how to deal with people and learning how to calm people down and learning how to be calm yourself. I think is going to be something that's needed today and in the future. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things where, you know, beforehand, oftentimes we would say, you know, I wish I could do this, but I'm just too busy. I got too much on my plate. I got this spreadsheet to edit, or this document, this letter to write, or this video to produce, a number of different things. Well, that excuse can potentially go away with AI. Because if it's allowing us to get the work done that currently took us 8 hours to do, and now we can get that out, that work done in like 4 hours or 6 hours, or even 7 hours, saving an hour of our time, then what can we do with that saved time? And so I think there it's, you're thinking in the sense that, okay, I wish I could have that conversation with that customer, but I don't have the time. Well, maybe now you do.
Yeah.
And maybe there's an opportunity for you to do some of the things that you can't necessarily just outsource to AI, which in this instance would be, like you're saying, Chuck, you know, being a human being to people, like having that kindness. You can't have ChatGPT do a conversation with people, even though I've seen some instances where you can.
Yeah.
It's a different AI tool. But more so what I'm trying to share with you all is that, you know, a lot of the human touch, it's not so much an either or thing when it comes to AI. Now it's more of a both and. It's humans and AI working together. So you can actually utilize AI and still have the human touch with the high tech.
Yes. And here we are. The other word that you used, you know, T-I-M-E, that four-letter word, time. And time doesn't stand still. It keeps on going. And like I said, if we learn to use AI as that tool and it gives back time, there it is. You've got family time. We're always wanting more time. And this is what can help you get back that time. So people need to open up their minds and figure out a way to take advantage of, I think, AI.
I agree. It's one of those things that, you know, if you were to ask my kids, how do they spell love? They spell it this way. T-I-M-E.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that you cannot ever get back. Once that minute has gone by, it's gone. So this is a great way to try to make more time for yourself to spend with your loved ones or doing whatever you want. Any thoughts on, you know, how do I want to phrase this? How can somebody in, say, the education arena use AI? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so in a former life of mine, I used to work as a dean of operations for a charter school.
Okay.
And so what goes along with that, for example, is you're doing a lot of scheduling, you're doing a lot of writing, maybe some spreadsheets in particular too, maybe some research here and there. And so, you know, how I look at AI as far as how this applies is, you know, no, I don't necessarily think that AI is going to necessarily grade your papers unless you have a quiz or test that's created by AI and they could just instantly grade it right then and there, or grade papers and that sort. But, you know, I think what really comes out as far as a possibility for educators is taking a look at what you're currently doing on a day-to-day basis. And being honest with yourself to say, hey, what are some things that absolutely need that human touch you're talking about, Chuck? Like that sense that nobody else can really do this for my students or for my school outside of me. And what things could I have AI help with? Maybe do something as similar, as small as just write the first draft of a report, mm-hmm. or help me come up with the first draft of a presentation I'm doing during a professional development day coming up, or a first draft of a email or letter to send to parents reminding them of an upcoming school event, you know, as opposed to you see, glaring at a blank screen, you know, and trying to figure out, okay, what's the first sentence I should say? No, it's like you can actually figure out, hey, this is what I'm looking to do. I'm trying to keep it within these number of words or pages, and this will give a prompt or instruction to an AI tool in particular. And in a matter of seconds, you have a letter already written out, an email already written out. So now you're just kind of taking a look at just the sentences and making sure that sounds more like you, like in your voice. You might make some edits here and there, or additions or deletions, but you're saving a good amount of time that I know from personal experience, a lot of educators don't have a lot of free time.
Right.
So I think it's one of those things that when you take a look at what you do on a day-to-day basis, you ask yourself the question, what is something that I absolutely have to be hands-on doing myself? And what are some opportunities where AI could actually help me be more productive, get more out of this, or take some things off my plate and free myself up to do more of the things that either I know I need to do, but I haven't had time to do it, or more of the things that I love to do, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a great way of looking at it, as you're kind of saying it's a draft. It helps you. You create a draft and you take it from there. And that's one of the things I think that I had learned a couple years back when educators or education system, they were afraid that students were going to cheat, you know, using AI. Honestly, out of my friends' kids and stuff, I haven't heard anything about cheating. I've, of course, heard, you know, they use it to help them. Mm-hmm. And I also think as long as people understand that AI can be wrong and you need to, again, use that as a draft, but you also need to research. You need to make sure that the statements and things that come out from the AI are correct. So no matter what, I think it helps people use their brain still.
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar to how we looked at places like Google, for example. Mm-hmm. Like when I was growing up, we had a card catalog in the library where you physically had to locate books on a bookshelf.
I remember that.
And our Google was Encyclopedia Britannica. Yes. Right? When they were still selling encyclopedias door to door, that was what it was for me. And then once Google comes in, it's like the thought of, oh, I could just search something and a page comes up and I can grab the information. This is kind of like the new generation's Google, so to speak, but much more powered, where now it's just like, you just tell me what to do and I'll just go ahead and create it for you. I mean, whether it's ChatGPT or this new tool I just came across recently called Perplexity.ai, which is similar to ChatGPT, but they actually can do research. Mm. And for those who are like worried with ChatGPT, it's like, well, where are they getting this data from? Where are they getting this information from? Well, apparently it sounds like Perplexity.ai, for example, they actually can source the material. So to your point, Chuck, it's like, I think it's going to be really interesting to see among educators how you go about this because, listen, I've been a student before. I've procrastinated before to the last minute and had a report due the following morning. And I panicked before many times to try to come up with a report before I fall asleep or before the class starts. Right?
Yes.
Well, gee, I wish I would have had ChatGPT or some of these other AI tools back then. But to your point, I really see this as really interesting because in some sense, Chuck, I feel kind of at a loss of words, kind of feel slighted because I spent so much time trying to learn how to write well.
Yeah.
That now it's just like I feel cheated in the process. Just like any student from an A student to an F student can pretty much quickly produce something that looks A material and it didn't really come from them. Right. And so that's where I feel like it's really going to be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if they're having forums and discussions now about how do we go about homework now? Yes. Like, how do we go about having, you know, computers in school now? And how much access to internet do they have, you know, when it's test time or quiz time? Because I can imagine it's one where it's just like, yeah, with any new technology, there's some people that will use it for good. And some people that might push the envelope a little bit towards being on the opposite side of it.
Yeah. You know, that is part of my fear about this is that we're going to create possibly a lazy or a lazier generation of people. And then that is actually, to me, that's going to affect every part of society and safety. And when I say about safety, it's... What if we're supposed to know something because we went through school, we passed, and we passed with flying colors? We go out there and get a job, and that job calls for us to either monitor the other AI robotic things or maybe for us to do something, but we don't really know how to do it. It was the AI that really helped us through school. That is my fear. You know, I don't want somebody to go, well, what was 3 times 2? I'm supposed to put how many bolts in that wing flap? I think 2 is going to work out fine. You know, or they'll go, oh, 3 times. Is that an X or is that a plus thing? What is that? Yeah, that is my fear.
Right. And it's almost this sense where I feel like people will oftentimes in our ages or above will start to reminisce over the glory old days.
Yeah.
Where you actually had to write things out with a pencil and paper. Where you actually had to use a typewriter to produce paper reports, or dare I say now, go use your favorite document tool like a Microsoft Word, and your AI was simply spell check. Yeah. You still had to produce your own content. They were just making sure you didn't misspell any of the words here. And so I think, yeah, to your point, Chuck, I think it's very much a concern. I would think I got 2 daughters. Here at home, they're 7 years old, so I got a little time to think about this. But I would imagine, like, even just that case itself, Chuck, 7 years old, they'll probably start producing papers and stuff like that in class in like 4 or 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. Like, where are we going to be when it comes to AI by that point?
Yeah. You're making me think about this natural, I shouldn't use the word natural, but the progression. Remember, we had to learn how to write cursive writing.
Yep.
And then, of course, you had to print well.
Yep.
And then next thing you know, there's just a lot of acronyms being used instead of words. People are shortening it up. And then we go into, like I said, using phones and chat stuff. And it either finishes our sentence and it spell checks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, where are we going next? Where are we going next with language? We're not all telepathic. At least I don't think we are.
If well, I that look was at my you, thought.
yeah, you know, In a way, we are. I guess if somebody gives you that eye, that look, you're like, okay, I think I know what that is, or what that means. But
but that, like, it's my next thought was just like, okay, the somebody said nowadays the only thing private we have are our thoughts.
Yeah. Right?
And I wouldn't put it past human beings to think of, is there a way to use an AI tool that can try to sense what you're thinking, Chuck?
There is.
And
there
then was. Produce exactly what you're thinking, at least on some sort of screen or in real life, like a 3D printing. It's like, who knows what happens at that point. But yeah, I think that's part of what's very interesting, but also kind of scary, because it really feels like we're in like the first inning of this AI game here.
You know what, Philip? I think there was something that they did last year that did that, where the AI put together whatever was happening in your brain and put it into an image. So it was something along the lines of, it's, you guys that are listening or watching, don't, you know, quote me, but go out there and look this up. But I think it was something like the person was given a baseball, and they were thinking of a field, and then the AI, it was humongous. It's one of those things that you have to put your whole body into, type of thing. But it made an image of a field. It didn't have the base plates, but it came really close. That's kind of cool, but kind of scary, because my future thought about something like that is, it's going to be okay, I'm thinking way out of the box on this, Philip. If you have a loved one that's passing, or your dog, and you want to know what are they thinking, or if they're in a coma, what are they thinking? I could see some medical applications with this. You know, it's maybe they're hungry and they can't say it to you, but they're thinking of an ice cream cone, and you're like, oh, okay. But it's pretty unlimited, I think, if we think about it, and as long as we don't go to the Terminator stuff and.
Right.
I think that's a big fear of a lot of people, right? But that might be an unrealistic fear. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, it's kind of my thing with like science fiction in general. It's like, it sounds innocuous at first, right? Yeah. A Terminator, as far as like a half man, half cyborg, back when I was growing up, you know, beating up other robots to save humanity, so to speak. Until we get to a point where we're like talking about potentially implanting computer chips into human bodies to do certain things. Yeah. Like if you look at your watch and it's so close to your skin, Apple Watch, Fitbit, whatever the watch. But they're like testing, they're like telling you your heartbeat. They're telling you maybe like your blood sugar level. They're telling you how many steps you've walked. Like, we are progressing closer and closer each year to a Terminator age. It's one of those things where it's just like, I was a big fan of Jurassic Park growing up, right? And for the life of me, I never quite understood why Jurassic Park has lasted this long. It should have ended the first movie. Should not have been six movies plus. It should have been, okay, we had this crazy idea to genetically create these dinosaurs that have not existed for thousands of years. We thought it was a good idea to put them on Earth in a park that people would pay to come visit and think that it would be okay to have them running around until the power shortages and electric fences and gates aren't working anymore, and T-Rex bends through the gate and starts wreaking havoc on the whole, you know, park. And I would have thought, okay, fine, we did the experiment, we found that that's not a good idea, shut it down. No. We're going to want to do a sequel to try to replicate something different, because we've learned our lesson. And now you got T-Rex going to America and wrecking havoc there. And so now you're like at the sixth movie where they're talking about, how do we help get raptors to be war machines.
Yes.
That now you have certain countries thinking, if I could just get a hold of that raptor, now I can wreak havoc in war. And I think that's like a great parallel to where we have to be careful with regards to AI. It sounds innocent now, but in the hands of the wrong person or with the right or with the wrong type of thoughts or motivation, who knows where this can go? And that's part of my concern, because that gets beyond plagiarism. That gets beyond lazy students. This is where it's like now where if we're not being careful, this can absolutely hurt lives beyond lost jobs.
You know, when you put it like that, it does put a... a definite concern. And the way that AI is just advancing so fast, it can happen. And like I said, there's going to be neural links between a computer put in our brain or whatever it is. And that's kind of already happening.
It's kind of like what people often say with regards to money, Chuck. If you get a lot of money, Chuck, it's probably going to not really change you. It's probably just going to make you more of who you really are, right? If you're a very generous person already,
yeah.
Then if you get $10 million, you're probably going to be really generous with that $10 million. If you're a very stingy person at $100, then if I give you $10 million, you're probably going to be very, very stingy still.
Yes.
And so I think it's kind of similar here. It's just like, I think AI to the person is probably going to reflect more of your morality and your values and more of who you already are inside and how you would use this tool to exercise what is in your heart.
Very well said. 100% agree with what you're saying. It'll just bring out more of what and who you are. Folks, I just want you to know that the conversation is with Philip Blackett, and you could go to his website, which is just www.philipblackett, and that's philipblackett.com. This has been a wonderful conversation. I think it's really, at least to me, it's opening my eyes up more to the possibilities of the future. Good. Of AI and the fears of AI. So I'm going to have to, you know, keep up to date with technology and see what's happening and what's in the near future. Mr. Blackett, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Chuck. Hope this is helpful for everyone listening in. And absolutely, it's been a pleasure being with you here.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.